We're drawing from information that was presented at the recent K-State Ranching Summit here on the campus, and it looked at grazing alternatives and possible strategic partnerships between cow-calf producers and crop producers in as far as making the economics work better for both. Joining us, once again, the presenters of that talk, Michael Taylor and Dustin Pendle. They are K-State agricultural economists. Michael, we were talking about cover crops and their utility and how they've caught on as a concept here in Kansas. But the numbers as far as grazing cover crops and whether there's a decent return to that enterprise. Actually, you have teamed up with others in K-State Research and Extension to explore that, right?
Yes, we have. So I've been working with Robin Reed, also out of Ag Econ, and Doug Shoup, our Southeast Area Agronomy Specialist, and Jamie Limfarney, who is our Southeast Area Livestock Specialist. And what we put together was, it's available on agmanager.info, and it's a cover crop cost return budget. Gives you the opportunity to put in some of your own numbers. We ran it for cereal, rye, and turnip as a seed mix for the cover crop, and we did it under different yield levels. And what you find is that the profitability of this enterprise really depends on how much of a yield you can get out of that cover crop. That's also going to be a function of – it's a function of fertilizer. It's a function of rainfall, soil quality, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But what it really comes down to is the ability to – how you can stock it. So in those lower yields, you're only going to be able to stock 1 to 1.5 head per acre, whereas if you can get into the higher yields – in our example, we have a 2.5-ton yield, and you can get above two head stocked on that on a per acre basis. The rent we assumed was $0.75 per head per day. And that is, you know, negotiable. You have to determine whether or not that includes the crop producer's labor to go out and check those cows on a daily basis, or if you're close enough to be able to check them yourself as the livestock producer. And we also assumed a 75-day grazing period. So lots of assumptions that if you go in there and you change those can change the way that this looks for you. But what you want to come down to is the ability to offer to the crop producer an opportunity to make a little bit of money off of this. And then plus they're going to get hopefully that added benefit on the conservation side. And that's what can make this a mutually beneficial agreement.
But that is really the bottom line. Again, all the variables in play here, but this can be a paying proposition for both parties.
Yes, it can. Yes, in certain parts of the state, we can make this work for both sides.
One of the more traditional winter grazing opportunities in those parts of Kansas where winter wheat can take this is grazing winter wheat, putting calves or the cow-calf herd on that winter wheat for a fair period of time. Again, this can be done a number of ways, Dustin, but can that also be a profitable opportunity?
Yes, it can, Eric. There are kind of three strategies, I guess, that we tend to think of when producing winter wheat, which is harvesting the grain only, or a dual purpose where you graze and then you harvest the grain. Or a third method, I guess, would be just grazing only, as they call graze out. And it's going to depend upon both weather and the market conditions on which one of these methods might be more profitable. But we are hearing more and more people talk about the foraging grain or the forage-only options as the market conditions are low.
Is it clear as to whether this alternative will in fact show a profit for the winter wheat producer as well as the cattle producer right now, though?
I guess that comes back to comments we made earlier that there are opportunities if you were to graze out only for the crop producer. Getting some additional revenue would be one option there as well. In terms of the economic costs, revenues, there are some tools that we have on Ag Manager that will allow producers to look at the various options, whether you're looking at a dual purpose or the grazing only option.
And it's important that producers put their own numbers in because there are a lot of moving parts here, so to say.
Absolutely. And there are budgets, as we said, we got budget tools where they can insert their own numbers to evaluate the strategies that will work for them.
And by name, if you look on agmanager.info, you can find wheat grazing and wheat graze out, the budget from K-State, as well as the wheat stocker, planter, and graze out from Oklahoma State University. Great resources to do your own calculations there, producers. Something that's maybe not talked up as much as would be helpful here, and that would be grazing resources available that were previously in the Conservation Reserve Program, Michael, and there's a fair amount of acreage out there that falls into that description.
Right. So both talking about, you know, grazing winter wheat, which is really being driven by the very low price of wheat, and that's sort of an issue that's taking hold, you know, right now and that we're all considering right now. The other one that's very time sensitive is land that's essentially being kicked out of the CRP. And that, again, is something that's sort of a short run where it's here because the 2014 Farm Bill put a pretty significant cap on the number of acres we could have in CRP. So in some counties, we're seeing large numbers of contracts that are coming up for renewal not getting re-enrolled. Well, that opens up some ground that could potentially be used for pasture. And in some of the work that I've done for some north central counties, basically the option to plant it, to, you know, to turn it into crop producing ground is so, I mean, you're going to lose money if you try to crop it.
Part of which is this is marginal ground to begin with.
Part of which is it's marginal ground. Some of it has been in the CRP long enough that it never had terraces installed. The CRP was done instead of that. So there's some investment that has to go into making a decent crop ground. So just a lot of things in the negative column, mostly because the profitability of cropping right now is so poor. So this was actually an opportunity to see some of this ground turned into pasture. It's not going to go into pasture costlessly. This is retired crop ground, so it's not likely to have good fencing on it, and it's not likely to have a good water source on it. So there are some capital investments that need to be made. Some of the things that folks are talking about is looking at another government program called EQIP, which has some really good support programs for offsetting costs of putting in new fence if you're going to graze it, especially if it's coming out of CRP. So there are some options there. But some of these things, you know, if we're talking about cover crops, you know, this is an annual decision, but it's something that might enter into some folks' strategy long run. Other issues here are sort of a short-term opportunity that may increase some collaboration between producers, you know, livestock and crop producers in the short run.
Mm-hmm. But there is a common thread in all of this in terms of the winter grazing alternatives. There's going to be some sort of capital investment to some degree, it would seem.
Yes. And so whenever there's something like a capital investment required in order to get into one of these arrangements, I think one common question is who's going to pay for it? And do I know that this option is going to be available to me for enough years to justify making that capital investment? So let's say you're the livestock producer and you're willing to provide, you know, hot wire. But if you're going to buy it, you'd probably like to know that that pasture is going to be there for you, or those corn stalks or whatever are going to be available to you for a few years down the road. Makes it worth the investment. So I wouldn't be surprised if when we see these negotiations going on between crop and livestock producers that there's at least a couple of years of sort of guaranteed access to the ground in order to offset some of the risk involved in the capital investment.
So what you're really hinting at there is these arrangements need to be fully formalized, not casual, much as you would any other crop lease.
Yeah, I think we need to treat these as another form of a cropland lease or a pasture lease. Let's nail out the details and let's try to think about things on a multi-year basis. Just it's going to protect both parties.
Mm-hmm. And one final thing that you both shared in the presentation, stressing grazing alternatives and the costs of these alternatives we've been talking about tend to shift rather rapidly. So there's an element of being nimble here, isn't there?
Yes. I mean, in all honesty, I think people are very open to some of these, you know, strategic partnerships simply because the returns to farming are so poor. You know, if we were making good money, they wouldn't bother. But when the bottom line is really hurting, you sort of open yourself up to saying, well, what other kinds of business opportunities, you know, should I consider? And so that's maybe a silver lining to the current financial stress that we're experiencing, is that, you know, we might see some new partnerships that result in more efficient use of these fixed assets over the entire year as opposed to just during crop season.
Very good. Well, we shared several budgeting tools that are available on agmanager.info for your use, producers. We would also note that the entire presentation that Michael and Dustin put forth at the Ranching Summit on the costs of grazing alternatives can be found likewise on agmanager.info. You might reference that, for it gives a good outline of what's possible here and what needs to be considered in forging one of these arrangements between cattle producers and crop producers. Appreciate the comments from both of you. Thank you for being by.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Along with us from the Agricultural Economics Department at K-State, Dustin Pendle and Michael Taylor.